Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and my personal record from not aroused at all to reaching orgasm is 67 seconds. And it's weird that I know that, but
it's not. I've met sex nerds. Yeah. It would be weird if anyone else knew that, but
nah. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and porn person, and I have never measured that, surprisingly. But I've been doing a lot of edging this week, which just seems on theme.
So, oh, cool. Yeah, I saw your tweet about, like, a certain amount of retweets was related to how long you would have to edge for.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. I did that, I think, last week or something. I was like, I don't know, for every retweet, I get a minute. And the thing is, my followers are sadists. So
yeah, how did that go for you?
I got a lot of promo.
Good.
A lot of people saw that tweet. Yep. Excellent. Just what I wanted.
Your social media strategy is on point.
I've been doing this a minute.
I must commend you. So we're back to talk about duration for the second week in a row because y'all had so many questions about it. It continues to be a source of great anxiety and strife for many people in the sex-having community. The first question I want to talk about this week is one that is very close to my heart and something that I feel deeply in my bones. How can I gently communicate to a new partner that I only want them to go down on me if they're going to do it for a decent amount of time? 5 minutes of cunnilingus is just a sad tease for me. I feel you. I really feel you. I think that the important thing here, as a consent-conscious person, which I assume that you are since you listen to our show, is not to be like, you have to go down on me for a certain amount of time. Like, don't make it into some kind of scary, forcible ultimatum. Mm-hmm. You can definitely communicate more gently that it is a sex act where you prefer it to go on for a longer time. And that kind of puts the ball in their court as far as like deciding whether they're up for that. What do you think?
Yeah, I would take, rather than like you were saying, say, this is a thing that I need you to do for me, I would take it more as a like piece of information that you're sharing about your own body. And if you can like contextualize it as, you know, it takes me like, having someone go down on me is the kind of thing I really need to warm up to and, like, really get into it, and I like for it to last, like, a really long, languid time. And if that means it's a special occasion thing, like, that's fine. But, you can even chalk it up to, like, oh, I've had partners in the past who, like, I used to worry that they were just doing it because they felt like they had to stay down there, or I used to, you know, I've dated people who would only want to do it for a few minutes, and like, it hardly even feels worth it to me at that point, right?
Yeah.
So you can talk about it as your own tastes and share it as like context about, hey, this is how my body works. These are the things that are true for me. And like Kate was saying, they can opt in if that's a thing that sounds hot to them or not.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. I really do like that trick of like, stating a thing about your past experiences that just happens to be useful information for them now. I also think a lot of people who struggle with this, as in people who don't perform oral sex for what their partners would consider to be long enough, it can be because of like expectations about what's going to come next. So maybe they just get really excited for if it's like PIV after that or whatever, whether they themselves are personally excited for it or whether they feel like you're excited to get to that part because of this whole like cishet framing of like PIV is the centerpiece, or, you know, sometimes strap-on sex or something else penetrative is considered the centerpiece. So it might be helpful to have a session that is explicitly stated as just devoted to oral sex or whatever thing you want to do for longer. And, you know, set that up in advance verbally, again, without like forcing them to do anything, but just maybe, you know, today's a Saturday afternoon and I just feel like having a long, languid oral session. And then maybe you can offer the same in return for them.
Yeah. And this is only like tangentially related, but as someone who like hasn't gone down on vulvas a lot historically, can we just take a moment of appreciation for like the headspace that comes with just having someone sit on your face for a really long time, because that has become a recent staple of my sex life. And it, you just get into this little, like, sensory deprivation bubble, because there's just thighs around your ears and everything, and it's great. It's just, that's all it is. Mm. So anyway, people should be signing up to do this for a long time, because it's fantastic.
Yeah, just cut out that clip and send it to your partner.
Yes. Anyway, I've been having a week. Beck says so. This is going to be a fun episode, I guess. Here we are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's something to be said for headspace in giving head. I just realized how punny that was as I was saying it. But I do think that is something that a lot of younger people don't know about yet, because they just, like, haven't done it for long enough or haven't done it in, like, a relaxed enough environment. Mm-hmm. And it is the kind of thing where, like, once you discover it, if you like it, it can be a big motivator to do more of that. Like, I used to really not be into giving BJs because it was, like, a high anxiety moment for me, and it felt really high pressure, and, like, I have to see it through to the end and stuff. And when I was able to peace out and just, like, view it as, like, a pleasurable act that didn't necessarily have a specific conclusion and that wasn't necessarily super high pressure, because most people are just like, yay, you're going down for me.
Yeah.
That was really helpful for me in terms of getting into it.
Didn't you write a thing about, like, mindfulness or, like, meditative headspace and blowjobs or something?
Yeah, I think it was called, like, mindfulness, meditation, and my slutty mouth.
Sounds
something
right.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because I think I would actually be interested to know if it's easier to get into that kind of headspace with, like, eating pussy than sucking dick. Mm-hmm. Just depending on, like, physical logistics. I guess it depends on the person, as these things usually do. But yeah, it's definitely interesting to focus specifically on one task that just sort of takes up all your senses and drift away into that.
Yeah, in my, like, I wouldn't have expected it to make a difference. And, like, it doesn't. I do have kind of a, like, meditative headspace that I get into with sucking dick, too, although it has been a minute. But, like, something about bodies with any bits is they can just be, like, my whole face. Like, there's the, I don't know, with Audi bits, I am, like, approaching them and engulfing them when I want to or whatever. And any bits, it's just like, no, I'm just here along for the ride. And that's all that I'm experiencing right now. It's very nice for someone who gets overstimmed during sex often. Anyway.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, here's another question. What's a good way to communicate to someone that you're up for a round two?
Hey, want to go for round two?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on your relationship and stuff. I think that oftentimes when people are worried about how to bring this up, it's because they worry about being perceived as, like, insatiable and that that's a bad thing. And good to keep in mind that especially early in a relationship, you don't really know necessarily what your person's sex drive is like or their refractory period. And, like, if you're scared to bring up a round two, they might also be scared. Mm-hmm. So might as well shoot your shot, I think.
You can also, again, similar to the advice before, you can just raise it as helpful information about you and your body. And as someone who is into you, they're probably interested in it. So if, you know, whether you're laying in bed having and they just got off, or you've, like, straightened up the room or whatever and are, like, moving back into the living room and, like, watching something, and suddenly you're like, oh, hey, but that's hot again, right? Like, it's only been, like, 15, 20 minutes, I don't know, but, you know. Wherever you're at in that window, you can be like, God, I was just thinking about what we did, and that was, like, so hot, I'm getting fucking turned on again already. Like, you can almost play it up yourself a little bit, be like, God, you know, if you're a person who is very into, like, the slut-shamey genre of humiliation, you could be like, wow, man, I'm such a fucking slut. I'm already horny again just, like, thinking about what you did, right? And they could be like, wow, yeah, that sucks for you. Or they can do something about that. And, you know, whatever power dynamic or however you want to, like, contextualize that in your relationship, it can just be fun to throw out into the air, hey, I'm horny. And theoretically, depending on where you're at in your relationship and depending on what your relationship looks like, but I think it's probably a good move to at least aim to get to a point in your relationship where, hey, I'm horny, doesn't mean, oh, God, either fuck me now or I'm going to be mad at you. It can just be yeah. a fun, sexy thing that you both know about each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that of just, like, putting the information out there and not putting any particular expectation on it and just, like, waiting to see how they respond. Mm-hmm. I think that something my partner does that's similar is, like, if they want to go for a round two and I'm just, like, debt for my previous orgasm still, mm-hmm. they'll sometimes be like, I'm still turned on. Would you like to hold me while I jerk off, or would you like to use your hands or mouth on me? Like, they give me lots of options, which mm-hmm. is great because it gives me lots of outs, because at that point, like, I used to be able to go for rounds two and three when I was younger, and now I've just become an old lady with a chronic illness. So very often I'm like, oh, honey, like, if this was 5 hours from now, I would love to do that, but physically I cannot sustain mm-hmm. such an endeavor right now. So I really enjoy having that out. And also, like, sometimes they'll give me options that are pretty low effort for me, but are still, you know, connective. Like, something we've been enjoying lately is, like, me using my magic wand on their dick, which is, like, fairly easy for me. And, like, I can set up my body in such a way that the weight of the wand is supported on something. And mm-hmm. It's fun. And I just have to, like, sort of move my hand back and forth a little bit. So mm-hmm. that's great. This is kind of two questions that were two sides of the same question, essentially. What can I do to help if my partner struggles to finish and it goes on for a long time? And mm-hmm. then another listener had the question, at what point is it appropriate to go, I can't do this anymore, but I'll gladly watch you jerk off or whatever?
Well, the second answer is much easier, because whenever it's true mm-hmm. is when it's appropriate. Because if you're, if at any point you're like, I gotta tap out, that is an appropriate time to share that with the person you are fucking.
Yeah, just don't be mean about it, because yeah. this is how people get hangups. Like, don't be like, oh my God, you're taking forever. Just be like, make it about you. This is always the advice we give. Like, mm-hmm. my muscles are getting tired, or I'm getting a little bit sore. Do you mind if we, you know, do something else?
Mm-hmm. Or even turn it into, like, I want to watch you. Can you show mm-hmm. me how you get off? Can you show me, like, the things you want to do right now? Like, maybe it's easier for you to, like, touch yourself and watch them play with themselves. And you could even, in the moment, just turn it into a sexy reason that, man, their hand needs to be the one jerking up and down right now and not yours. Because mm-hmm. for hot reasons, absolutely, and not joint pain at all. So you can do something like that. I mean, I do recommend eventually being like, hey, I can, you know, my endurance is only so long. What can we do? Mm-hmm. like, what is a fun alternative for you in those moments? So that second question is, I think, going to depend really deeply on who your partner is. Mm-hmm. This is definitely something y'all should be talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're using language like struggling to finish. Like, is it a thing that you're both stressed out about, that this person is not getting off? Or are one of you stressed out about it and neither of you talking about it? Because if that's a situation, that's a very different problem to handle. But if you're both mm-hmm. on the same team and you're like, you know, your partner's like, hey, I like orgasms. And you're like, hey, I like watching you have orgasms. How can we do this while still having a life that functions outside in the world? Because I don't have several hours a day for this. I would explore opportunities where they struggle less, right? Can they get themselves off faster than you can get them off? What mm-hmm. does that look like? How is that different from the times you're getting off? Are there positions, right? How did they get off when they were younger? And, like, how did they learn to come? Did they get into any, like, routines that maybe they're not noticing? Right? I definitely have positions that it's a lot easier for me to come in than other ones. Some because, like, my legs shake a lot when I come. So standing, not necessarily the safest. but other things are just, I don't know, that's the way my body got used to coming, because I jerk off that way a lot. And my body's like, oh, I know what comes next when I lay this way. Mm-hmm. So if there are things that you can recognize there and appeal to and kind of split the difference between circumstances that are easier for your partner to come and circumstances that involve you and that are fun and that are different and ways that they want to learn to come more easily or faster, that can certainly help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also quite possible that they know some things that would be helpful and, you know, they just haven't had the opportunity to communicate that.
Mm-hmm.
If someone was to ask me, what can I do to help you get off? Like, there's a whole list of things I could tell them. I think that some common things that work for a lot of people are dirty talk,
mm-hmm.
Add more lube, get into a more comfortable position than whatever one you're currently in,
mm-hmm.
and try to take the pressure off. And I do think that touching yourself is often a pretty effective, like, fail-safe for many people, regardless of anatomy. There are some people who, like, don't masturbate or didn't start masturbating until late who, like, may not, you know, feel that that's the most effective method. But mm-hmm. I think in general, it's a pretty good way to go. That's pretty much my go-to if, like, I'm having trouble getting off a partner. It's just, like, they'll jerk off and I'll just, like, be in their ear. I mean, I'm not very good at dirty talk and I wish that I was more so. It's something that I would like to get better at. But I do find it's effective for many people. And you don't have to be super imaginative. You can literally just describe what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. Like, I love watching you stroke your dick. Your dick is so hard. I love how it felt in me earlier. Wow, that looks so hot. Your moans are so hot. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And to just also add on the one thing that you mentioned briefly there in taking the pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I'm a pervert. If you got this far without knowing that, we need to work on your listening comprehension. However, for me, sometimes one of the fastest ways to get me to come is taking coming off the table. It could be really fun to say, oh, are you having a hard time coming? Well, that's great, because I don't need you to come at all tonight. I'm just going to do things to you, and you're just not gonna, and I'm going to experiment, and we're going to see what makes that harder and easier for you to not come. And then maybe, like, another night, we'll come back and visit the things that made it really hard for you to not come.
That's so real. I've found this especially when I've been receiving oral sex, because I think that's a situation in which I feel a lot of pressure to come mm-hmm. within a reasonable time frame, and, you know, reasonable has air quotes around it.
Mm-hmm.
But often I find if I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to come from this, I'm starting to feel like I'm not going to, and I just communicate that to my partner. Sometimes I find that, like, then I can come pretty quickly after that, because mm-hmm. like, I think there's something that unlocks for me when a partner, like, hears me say that and is like, well, I'm going to continue anyway because I'm into this and I'm enjoying this, and it doesn't need to be goal oriented. And mm-hmm. that just helps me relax a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
This is a great segue into a question that as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, Bex is going to love this. How can you eroticize / kinkify lasting too long, quote unquote, or not lasting long enough?
Yes.
And we talked last week briefly about one of my favorite manifestations of this in my own life, which was playing with numbing sprays.
Mm-hmm.
Because that becomes this power play of, like, I'm taking away your sensation from you, which is, like, really wildly powerful. I mean, we don't have many opportunities to do that in a consensual and kinky way,
mm-hmm.
Aside from, like, chastity play and stuff. Mm-hmm. What comes to mind for you with this question?
Oh, so many things. So many things. Okay, so the first thing I would want to do is, like, we talked on this briefly with the other one, if I'm playing with the ideas of coming too quickly or coming too slowly, and of course, too, the largest air quotes around every word in that sentence, honestly. But if I'm doing that, I want to talk to the person I'm playing with, because it's going to vary wildly on the kind of submissive they are, whether the game is I'm telling them to do the thing they're going to do, right? If you are a person who takes a really long time to come, well, then the game is, I need you to take a really long time to come. And then I come up with a reason for that, because I need to use your cock, because I'm too busy and I want to watch you come later, so, like, you just can't now. Or because, like, you know, whatever that looks like, right? Or because I need you to be able to be ready for me when I want to use your cock. So, like, whatever. So you just come up with a story and a reason around that, and now suddenly the thing that was happening already is hot because of this story, because they were going to take a long time to come, but now you're doing it because I said so. And, yeah. Like, the alternative is true, too, right? Oh, you were going to come really fast, but now you're going to come really fast because I need your cum, and I don't really care about your pleasure anyway. This is for my evil science experiment. I don't know, so I just need that, right? Whatever story you come up that way around. Or, right, so you have this one version of kink where you're encouraging what is going to happen. Flip that on its head, you can, again, look at these scenarios, right? I have a person who is going to take a really long time to come, or a person who is going to come fairly quickly, and they are into humiliation, or degradation, or shame, or embarrassment, or whatever, you know, genre along that spectrum feels hot to them. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes, great, so this is the thing that's going to happen, well, I'm going to demand the alternative for XYZ reason, right? I need you to last a long time because I really need to use you, except you're a person who's going to come too fast, and then I'm going to laugh at you for it. This is one of those fun things for me that, like, I feel like I'm looking at a slot machine of, like, top and bottom and coming too fast or too slow and reasons, and I could just shuffle them and be like, yeah, that's a scene, sure. Yeah. That's just because I'm a perv for edging.
Right. Yeah, I think an important thing here is, like, in order to do this effectively, I do think you are going to have some conversations about kink psychology, what turns you both on, and how you both feel about the quote-unquote lasting too long or not lasting long enough. Because in eroticizing something, you have to be careful to avoid what's going to be a psychological minefield. You know, if someone has a lot of anxiety from a previous relationship where they were told that they took too long, you're going to want to probably be careful around that, unless they think that they can, you know, eroticize that and work through that by eroticizing it. But that's going to require a conversation. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that I've been enjoying playing with lately is, so, like, when my partner is in chastity and when I sometimes, like, briefly unlock them, obviously, since they've been in chastity, like, they're going to come more quickly. I guess maybe not, obviously. It depends on your body. But I think most people, that's probably how it would work. And so one thing we play with is, like, sometimes if they come accidentally while I'm doing stuff to them, like, without permission, I will punish them by immediately, like, continuing the stimulation and, like, overstimulating them. So it's a way of, you know, I get what I want and they get what they want. That's fun. And also, I think there's a lot of people who have hang-ups about coming too quickly. I think this is especially a problem for people with penises, although, like, anyone can experience this. And there's a perception that no one would ever like it if you come too quickly, which is not true. Not, no. Like, as I've discussed, like, I have a premature ejaculation kink. I am very sexually intrigued by the idea of, like, someone coming so quickly that they're even, like, surprised by it themselves. So if this is something that turns you on, definitely communicate that to your partner, because they might be stressing about coming too quickly. And there are definitely ways to play with that, especially if you keep in mind that an orgasm, as we discussed last week, does not have to mean the end of the session.
Yeah, and you've talked about this before, but a lot of that fear comes from that idea that the orgasm, especially with a penis, is the end of the session, right? The end of their, like, ability to be sexual, which, like, obviously isn't true, but I think that fear, like, makes it harder for people to see the things that are hot about someone just being so overwhelmed with pleasure.
Yeah.
That they, like, there's a lot of fun control stuff in there around, like, loss of control and, like, yeah, it's just, there's a lot of hot stuff to play with in getting off really fast that a lot of people I don't think of right away.
Yeah, and this is tough because it involves rejecting a narrative that is very strongly promoted by our society, mm-hmm. Which is that, like, part of your sexual power and virility as a person with a penis is, like, how long you can last, which I honestly think is pretty bullshit. I mean, obviously, it depends on who you're with. There are some people who are going to want you to last longer, but it shouldn't be, you know, taken as automatically true that people mm-hmm. are going to want you to last forever. I also think when you take orgasm off the table, as you were discussing earlier, it becomes mm-hmm. an opportunity for playing with a lot of stuff that you might not really think to play with otherwise, like mm-hmm. Sensation play type stuff that's not directly oriented toward orgasm, like wax play or e-stim or mm-hmm. Using tingly massage oils or tingly lubes on people's genitals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think that if orgasm is explicitly not your goal, it frees up a lot of space to do things that are not in service of orgasm and also paradoxically might make someone feel more able to orgasm.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Another thing that might be interesting to explore is kind of tangentially related to this, but if you're talking about kinkifying folks who can come particularly fast, that person might also be able to come several times, which is really fun for playing with things like forced orgasms and things like that. So in the same way you were talking about overstimming someone after they get off, you can also just make people go for multiples or make someone learn to be able to go for multiples. Because it's a thing mm-hmm. most bodies can do with varying degrees of effort.
Yeah, I found that my refractory period tends to be shorter than I think it is. Mm-hmm. because, like, there is a difference between the feeling of sort of, like, tiredness and exhaustion after orgasm and, like, the ability to experience genital stimulation as pleasure again after mm-hmm. orgasm. Which I think those two things are often conflated in discussions of the refractory period. So usually when I've played with being overstimmed after coming, usually I am into it again faster than I thought I would be. Mm-hmm. It loops around faster than I imagined. And I think overstim is really fun. I know that some people are really not into it, and that's fine. I just think it's an underrated, underexplored avenue for pleasure and enjoyment. It's mm-hmm. it's very fun and funny to watch someone like flailing around when they're being overstimmed. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it in porn. I enjoy it IRL. It's a delight.
It's a particular kind of squirmy that is quite fun.
Yeah. I have this porn performer I really enjoy watching with my partner named Velvet Veronica, who is mm-hmm. this, like, very intense Canadian femdom who is really good at hand jobs, and that's sort of the crux of what she does. And her partner, who she calls her pet, mm-hmm. When he's overstimmed post-orgasm, he often just, like, laughs the entire time, like, just silly giggling constantly, even as he's, like, kind of screaming for her to stop and stuff. And it's so cute, and it really helps me kind of, like, re-envision overstimming as, like, not necessarily a mean thing, but potentially, like, a really pleasurable and fun thing.
That's adorable. I love that.
Yeah. Okay, this person is wondering, what does it mean if I come quickly early in a relationship but take longer as the relationship goes on? And how can I reassure partners that it's not about a loss of desire for them? I get this. This is very real.
Yeah.
I think the like cocktail of hormones or whatever that you're experiencing during new relationship energy can really mess with your sexual response.
And like positively or negatively
or both.
Yeah.
And I think it's a pretty normal thing. I think that the harder part is the second part of the question, which is like explaining to a partner, you know, who is skeptical of this idea, that it does not mean that anything has changed as far as your desire and attraction for them. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I think I'm too autistic to answer this question. I don't know if we leave that in the show, because I don't know if I technically am, but my brain's just like, I don't know, date people who understand that, like, that's how brains work. The tactful way for me to take all of that. Because for me, the way it would look in my relationships is conversations that look like, hey, novelty is erotic in the brain, and, like, when you follow the same path over and over, it stimulates the brain differently than it would the first time I'm exploring a new thing, right? Mm-hmm. When I don't know what to expect when fucking someone, when someone touches me just there in just that right way the first time, it feels really different from, like, the 50th time when, like, I know they know it's my favorite spot. And, like, that I chose the word different, not better.
Yeah.
Because it is a, like, it's not a value judgment. I know for you, that second touch where you're like, oh, this person didn't just stumble across this area. They came here with a purpose and they know this is what gets me off.
Yeah.
Is particularly hot. So for me, like, I don't know, for me, there is a degree that just understands that. And I recognize that, like, those words in that order can be a hell of a jealousy trigger. Mm-hmm. Especially in, like, the culture we have and, like, the significance we put on these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, like, part of it is that, is having that conversation. And part of it is putting effort into, I don't know, maybe exploring that novelty again in your own relationship. Maybe you try new things or have, you know, specific date nights or find things to infuse that, you know, spice shit up, except I hate those words.
Yeah.
But, like, find your version of special occasion sex. And mm-hmm. because, like, when you are with someone for a long time, yeah, you have your, like, right before bedtime, regular routine kind of sex life. Mm-hmm. And you can recognize what special occasion sex looks like for you. What does it look like when you want to put a little bit extra into it and you want to do something a little special and a little bit fun? And that might, I don't know, approach some of that energy you were talking about earlier on in a relationship where your orgasms look different. And, like, I think we all have experiences of sex that we can look at and go, oh, hey, that was, like, fancy time sex, and, oh, hey, that was, like, maintenance sex. And, again, I don't say that with, like, value judgment. I have some really great, like, my partner and I have, like, perfected the art of fucking each other. We do it a lot. So, like, our fallback routine is really fucking good. And mm-hmm. I know the steps. I know what it looks like because we've done it a lot. Because we like it.
Yeah, I think a lot of times this anxiety comes from folks who are not really familiar with the concept of new relationship energy. Mm-hmm. It is an idea that comes from, like, polyamory, but, I mean, it's applicable across the board for people getting into relationships. I really think it is. Mm-hmm. It is an altered neurochemical state. And so I think that if you're able to, like, talk about that, not directly in relation to your own sex life, but just, like, sort of introduce that idea to someone, that can mm-hmm. maybe change how they conceptualize things. Because I think there are a lot of people who believe that, like, if the relationship doesn't remain at, like, a new relationship level of intensity and hotness and emotionality, that means that it's dying or it's, you know, doomed to fail. Mm-hmm. And that usually comes from people who, like, haven't been in a lot of long-term relationships before because, you know, that's just, it's just a thing that happens. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think even, like, talking about that idea can help them, like, reconceptualize that. And, yeah, trying new things. I mean, there's literally research that shows that, like, trying new things together as a couple is a great way to, like, maintain your sexual connection. Mm-hmm. Esther Perel talks about this in her book Mating in Captivity and on her podcast. And those can be sexual things or non-sexual things. They can be, like, trying new hobbies together, watching new movies together that have exciting scenarios in them, watching porn scenes together that involve fetishes that you haven't yet waded into. The brain, in some sense, craves novelty mm-hmm. and responds to novelty. And you don't have to, like, judge yourself or your relationship based on that impulse. It's a very natural impulse. And, yeah. you know, our brains can, you know, in the same moment choose to be in a relationship that has been around for a while and also be craving novelty. And it's not a judgment call on your relationship.
Right.
And yeah. And that, I mean, if someone doesn't understand that and won't accept that, that's not really on you, but there are some things you can do to sort of, like, help them along in that realization.
Yeah, and I love that idea of doing even non-sexual things together to, like, stoke that excitement and curiosity. Even if you go for a hike or do some sort of athletic thing together, or, like, go to amusement parks when those exist again and get on roller coasters and, like, actually get your heart rate up together and, like, put your body through the motions of that excitement that, like, might have come from nerves early on. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, all of that advice we just gave, but, like, doing those things apart, too, if you're exclusively doing them together. If you are spending lots of time together doing, like, novel things and, like, sexy things and whatever, maybe the answer is doing them with other people. And the answer might be sexy things, because I'm a slut. Or it can just be adventurous, creative things. I always knew this was true, but I'm noticing it so much more concretely these past few months, like during quarantine and all of that, how much more I get turned on. Like, I go outside and just see hot strangers. Like, I go for a walk, I go to the park or something, and I'm like, wow, I saw, like, look at all those hot people or whatever. And then I get home and I'm like, oh my God, my partner's so hot. Wow, God, they're so hot. And then, like, I spend a week in the house and I'm like, wow, yeah, my partner's hot. I don't know, sex is a thing, I guess. I thought I enjoyed that. You know? So, like, giving me that novelty just has me thinking creatively around these things. So you can as well, you know, whether it is going and hanging out with friends and having time apart just for things to excitedly tell them about, or if it's, like, flirting with that person at the coffee shop, or if you're poly and it is fucking someone else and coming back and telling your partner about it. Like, those other separate experiences can also remind you how exciting it is to come home to your partner. And that's not to, like, discount those other experiences. They're great, too, but they can just, like, the more fun, at least in my experience, the more fun, sexy energy in my life, the more it feeds all of the other fun, sexy energy in my life, and I just pass it around. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something Esther Perel talks about as well, is, like, the necessity of, you know, remaining as separate people rather than sort of, like, merging into this couple entity who, like, know everything about each other and, like, conceptualize themselves as, like, essentially being one unit. She thinks that mystery is, like, a really important component to maintaining long-term pleasure. And, you know, independence is some element of that. I also want to say, since you mentioned quarantine, I don't know what this listener's situation is in particular, but, like, a loss of desire, a loss of libido, attraction, arousal right now, very, very normal. It's a stressful time we're living through. The amount of stimuli and types of stimuli that we're going through are, like, very different from quote-unquote normal life. And it may well have nothing whatsoever to do with your relationship or the status of your relationship. Like, the world is fucked. And if someone who you're dating doesn't understand or accept that as a reason why your sexuality is different from how it was before, I don't think they're a great person, honestly.
Yeah. Stand by that.
Yeah. I love when we sometimes occasionally tell listeners that they should dump the motherfucker already. It's like, not really, we don't do it too often, but when we do it, we really mean it. One more question. What can I say to reassure a partner who worries that they take too long to come? And this listener provided an example of one thing that I guess they have found helpful, which is saying, I love watching you. And I love that. I think that that's basically the crux of any answer we would give here, is, like, focus on positives. One thing I've really enjoyed hearing, I mean, basically partners have said this exact thing to me. I love watching you come. I love the process of basically, like, how long you take. I've also, as I said before, found it helpful to have partners who say, like, I enjoy pleasuring you. I don't really care if it ends in orgasm. It could or it could not. That's not the point of it for me. Hopefully you're only going to say that if it's actually true. Although I do think sometimes saying that when it's only, like, 70% true is probably a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, you're allowed to, like, want to see the hot person you're fucking come. Like, that's allowed to be an appealing thing.
Yeah.
It just shouldn't ruin your experience if they don't. Like, if it's gonna utterly ruin your experience to find out your partner didn't come but still had a good time, maybe explore that for yourself. Maybe that's a you thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I also think for me, again, I'm big into, I'm into power and stuff. So for me, it's like, it would be like, great, don't then, I don't want you to. But it could, it might also just be like, well, great, then I can taste you for as long as I want, right? Mm-hmm. And you can, like, for me, I would really emphasize the fact that, like, oh, good, I get to do this fun thing I like for longer. Fantastic. I mean, I guess you'll come eventually, sure. But, like, great, that means I get to keep doing this thing. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And again, it's my genre of dominance. But I think the core of what we're both getting at is that, like, presumably, it is not a problem. Presumably, you are enjoying the sexy bits with or without orgasm. So tell them that and focus on the pieces of that that are most true for you, because they're going to be able to tell when you tell them that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of my anxiety about this is left over from the days when I was having casual sex, where, I mean, casual sex is, especially if it's a one-off hookup, it really is just a different model typically for what the sex is going to look like and what the goals of sex are going to be. And I feel like orgasm is one of those sort of like easy benchmarks that we apply to all sorts of people when we don't know them very well as like the universal sign of sexual success. And when we get into longer term relationships, we recognize, of course, that like that's not the case for everybody, and it's not the case every time. It doesn't have to be the case. There are lots of pleasures to be found when that's not the case. But I do still definitely have some holdovers from that mindset. My partner does some things that are very similar to what you were just describing as far as like, oh, that's great, I get to go down on you for longer, which always makes me giggle and blush, even though we're literally married and we've been together for 3+ years. It still feels like new information every time, because I think I just like haven't fully absorbed that as true. It has taken many repetitions. So yeah, don't be afraid to repeat yourself with those types of reassurances. I think that they're often appreciated even upon, you know, multiple restatements. But yeah, I mean, this is kind of an interesting question, because it sort of brings to mind like, what is the philosophical like purpose of sex? Like I think about shit like this so much, but
if someone really wanted to just encapsulate this episode, this like this whole show in a clip, it's just you going, this is a really interesting question because it brings up the philosophical purpose of sex.
It really does, though, because like I think that our culture just infuses sex with all these messages about the goalposts to hit. And it's an oversimplification, because an orgasm is sort of this symbolic stand-in for I had a good time. And it is not the only representation of what a good time looks like. And, you know, this might warrant bigger conversations outside of the bedroom about what sex is for you, what it means, what do you have sex for? And that might be different than what your partner thinks it is, and that might be calming for them with regards to these anxieties.
Yeah, I mean, a thing that is absolutely true for me that I would not have probably believed was true when I was, like, first getting sexually active and learning how to come and all of these things is, like, orgasm isn't always the most pleasurable moment in sex.
Yeah.
Like, the height of my orgasm is not always equivalent to the height of my pleasure in a sexual experience. Sometimes it is, certainly. Like, sometimes I have what our mutual friend Krista Ann calls universe-creating orgasms. And other times, I have really, really hot sex, and I just, like, come at the end, and I'm like, oh, I guess I'm done fucking for a little. All right, sure, fine. Like, I don't know why that was amazing for, like, 40 minutes, and the last 30 seconds my body was like, nah. But, like, sure. Fine. Orgasms are fun, usually. Sometimes, meh. Sometimes that's also fun. That's a different thing. Other episode.
Yeah, it's like a movie. You know, sometimes in movies, there's always a section of the plot that's like the climax, but that usually is not the part that I enjoy the most or that I remember the most when I look back at watching that movie. Usually there's like a scene earlier that made me laugh harder than any other scene or that made me cry or whatever. And I do think that there is like culture-wide this kind of conflation of like the peak as, you know, the... I don't know what I'm trying to say. I do know what I'm trying to say, but I don't know how to word it. But yeah, orgasms are not ultimately as important as our culture likes to think that they are. It is hard to explain that to someone when they've internalized it so deeply that they're like feeling shitty about themselves about it. And this is where I think repeating that over and over again as needed can be very helpful. Because I've often like kind of not believed people when they've said that they don't care that much about it, even though I'm a sex educator. I encounter people all the time in my professional life who are like, orgasm is not important. I'm like, I kind of agree.
Well, I think what also can be helpful for that is if you live your sex life as a person for whom that is true, even before you meet someone who is like, wow, I take a long time to come. Like, you might share that information that you like teasing someone for a really long time before they get off, you know, or that like orgasm isn't a huge priority for you before this person even shares those insecurities. Like, this can just be a thing that is true for you in your sex life. And I think that can be really comforting. Or if you're in a relationship with someone for whom you know this is true, you can bring it up at times when they are not bringing it up or when they are not concerned about it, right? You can be, you know, getting ready to fuck and say, like, God, I hope I can go down on you for, like, 20 minutes or more tonight, right? Like, I hope you don't come too fast and I want to take a really long time with this. And express that you're excited about it before they have time to be nervous about it or at least express those nerves.
Yes. Yeah, my partner is so good at this. Because I'm so fucked up about this shit. They'll sometimes be like, I just want you to lie back and relax and let me go down on you for as long as I want. And I'm like, ugh, magic. Yeah. Just magic. Music to my ears. All right, that's all. Thank you, folks, for those excellent questions. This was a delight. I've been Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. I write a weekly essay on sex and love at katesloan.substack.com. This week's newsletter was about how it's important to be able to have good conversations with people you're dating, IMO, and how that is weirdly underrated, even though it's like pretty important, I think. Another thing is that my book, which is coming out in October, 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do, is on Goodreads now. So if you're in Goodreads, hop right on there and mark it as want to read. I don't know quite how that's going to affect my life, but I gather it's good and might matter in some way. So would appreciate if you would do that. If indeed you do want to read my book, which I hope that you will. Where's your stuff, friend?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing and information about my workshops at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm naked on the internet under Billy Lore. I have said some filthy shit this episode, so I guess go watch me do some of that stuff online. And I do customs. I've gotten a couple of fun ones recently. I'm pretty sure some of them are from y'all, because these folks know way too much about what gets me hard for people who just follow me on Twitter. So, like, I see you, and I love you. Together with the dildos. It's so fun. They like slide into my DMs. They're like, can I pay you to do this deeply hot thing? And I'm like, yes, you can.
Gladly.
Can my boyfriend help? Oh, I'm so excited. Anyway, together we're the Dildorks. We're at the Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. You also probably found us by searching the Dildorks in your podcast app. Continue to do us.
Keep doing us.
Yes. Continue doing that and also us so you can listen to us. God, I am just, it is a wild week. Anyway, also throw money at us at patreon.com/thedildorks to help us keep saying, I was going to like say clever shit, but honestly just out of pocket shit at this point if this is the episode. And help us keep doing what we're doing.
Yep. Thanks so much to Protodome, who did our theme song. His music is at protodome.bandcamp.com. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator, a sex blogger. Shockingly, haven't. Well, I'm gonna take that one more time. I don't usually say blogger anymore. I say porno person. Mm-hmm. Because I do that now. I'm Bex. You can find all my writing. Who am I? God only knows.